It's still the middle of winter, but we can dream about spring and about getting outside to enjoy our lawns and gardens. Don't forget about our trees. It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, along with Catherine Perkins, filling in for Charity Nebbe. There's nothing more pleasing than seeing our trees come back to life. But trees, like all living things, need care and attention. And that includes pruning, a job that a lot of us are a little wary about. Well, there's lots of good reasons for pruning, including added safety for humans, tree vigor, and for our fruit trees, stimulating production. This hour, we'll talk to DNR District Forester Mark Vitash, Richard Duran of Iowa State Extension Horticulture. And we look forward to your questions. But first, NPR News.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Catherine Perkins.
And I'm Dennis Reese. And it takes two people to fill in for Charity Nebbe, who's a little under the weather today.
We'll do our best, won't we, Dennis?
We'll try.
It's Horticulture Day on the program. And Mark Vitash, District Forester for the Iowa DNR, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist, are our guests. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Good to hear you both in the studio today. Thanks so much for being here. And Mark's presence should probably give you some clue about what we're going to talk about out of the box today. Trees. And I got to say, Mark, driving in today, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot going on with trees right now.
They're kind of resting. But with the funny kind of weather we're continuing to have, where we have cold and then warm, you look at some species, the buds are kind of swelling. The maple flower buds are swelling like they normally do this time of year. So they just don't know what to do. They're waiting.
And so what should we be doing right
well,
now?
Well, we always talk about pruning this time of year, and this is actually a really good time, the dormant season. I don't know if we're truly dormant with the weather we've been having, but typically this is a really good time to get out there and consider some pruning, especially on species such as oak. We have a disease called oak wilt, and we really don't want to be pruning oaks from probably the 1st of March until sometime in October or even later. So we're actually probably at just a couple weeks where if we're going to do any pruning on oaks, we should get that done in the next couple weeks. Now, if we get a real cold snap in the first part of March, first couple weeks, you know, the temperatures are averaging 30, 40, and nights are cold, you could probably extend that a little bit. But in general, if you're going to do some pruning, I would target the pruning on oaks here in the next couple weeks.
And that's because oak wilt is spread by an insect, right?
Right. Well, we keep going back and forth, and new research is showing different things. But in general, when you have an open wound in the springtime, it can produce sap. And the particular couple of the beetles that are attracted to sap can actually carry the fungus of oak wilt with them. And when they get to that wound, they actually bring the fungus to it. So the best way to prevent that from happening is to not prune during that time. And as spring goes, it gets more critical. Early on, we're probably being a little conservative by saying March, but you never know what the weather, insects, and those kind of things, if they're going to be active. But as you get into May and into those, the probability and potential for that to happen even increases more. And then as you get later in the summer, it actually starts to decrease, and you get closer to fall, it decreases. So that early spring, early summer is a real critical time when you don't want to prune oaks, because for red oaks, if they get oak wilt, they'll die that year generally. Usually within 6 to 8 weeks. It's a systemic fungus that gets into the system and kills the tree fairly quickly. With white oaks and bur oaks, they seem to be more tolerant, but they can still get the disease. And actually, when you have stresses, like we've had drought, last year we had more reports of oak wilt on white oaks, which we typically don't get, probably in response to the drought. So right now is a good time to prune those oak trees if you're going to do them, and also other trees, especially with young trees or trees in general. You can see the structure this time of year. It's easier to find those weak branches and things that you might want to prune out. Now, that doesn't mean that when you're mowing the lawn this summer in mid-June or early July, and that maple branch keeps hitting you in the head, or that linden branch hits you in the head, or that crabapple branch hits you in the face, you can prune those. If it's not an oak, midsummer on a lot of species, if you need to do some pruning, you can. it's especially with oaks, but in the wintertime, again, you can see that structure and those kind of things. And also, if you prune in the wintertime, those trees aren't actively growing. And then come spring, they can start to put that new growth to close those wounds shut and really go. But if you look at a lot of the literature, pruning in the summer necessarily isn't that bad. It actually can be okay. The two times I like to avoid is in the spring when things are leafing out. So I kind of want to wait till that new growth comes out, kind of slows down. And then I kind of back off in the fall, too, when I'm going under, when they're going under fall color change, because trees are going under major changes at that time. So if we can avoid some pruning, that's probably – but that still gives us some pretty, you know, all winter. And then on other species other than oak, you know, we can prune in the middle of summer if we need to.
So when you're looking at the structure of that tree, as you said, what are you looking for to know that something, you know, that's a branch that needs to go?
Well, let's start with young trees. The reason we really prune young trees is a couple different things, or trees in general. Aesthetics, we look at tree health if we have broken branches and those kind of things. We look at those. And then we always think about clearance. No matter where we plant a tree, we always think, do we need to lift it and those kind of things. And we'll talk about how quickly you should do that and stuff. But as far as structure, especially with shade trees, what you want to develop is a tree that has one nice straight leader. If you start to see double forks, so more of a V connection, those V connections can be very weakly attached. And usually at that V connection, it's bark against bark or potentially bark against bark. So as those branches get bigger, there's more weight, there's more pressure, they actually push apart. That's where those trees can actually split. And if you ever look after storms, look at trees that are 15, 25, 30 feet tall, and if half the tree falls off, you always look down where they were connected, and there'll be a big kind of brown or decay area, and that's where we had that V connection. Well, when trees are developing and when they're smaller, and if you can see that V connection, you can get it when it's smaller, and you can actually eliminate that. The other thing is, on most trees, if you have a branch that is narrow, less than 90 degrees, you tend to want to promote the ones that are more towards 90 degrees. Now, it's really important to know the species that you're working with. If you're working with a little leaf linden, they've never heard of a 90-degree branch angle on little leaf lindens, other than some of the newer cultivars. So they're structure is pretty narrow, so you have to work. So you don't want to go in there and prune every weak branch because that's their structure. But on other species like oak and even crab apples and others, if you have a narrow angle versus a wider, you're going to tend to promote those wider angles. Richard's going to talk a little bit about fruit trees, but even on apples, we actually promote that wider angle because it can take a heavier load for apples and those kind of things.
Mark, I have this tree outside my bedroom window. I don't know what it is. I think it's an ornamental fruit tree. It's about 20 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
I'm scared of pruning. I'm scared of it. I just don't want to hurt the tree. But it has tons of branches, most of them small. Now, I should get out there and do that, right?
Well, this sounds like maybe a crab apple, Dennis.
That sounds like it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, crab apples are a little different than like an oak or a maple. They don't have one straight leader. They just kind of have a big old mess of branches.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
So what you tend to concentrate on crab apples and those is you go after those rubbing and crossing branches, maybe okay. Branches that are going downward or going across. But the thing with crab apples, and in any tree, we can over-prune. We tend not to want to take more than 10 to 15% in any pruning. And even with big trees, the more of that crown we can leave in structure and branches, actually the better. Because what feeds the tree? The leaves. So the more leaves we leave, the better it is for the tree. So we can over-prune. So I understand your concern. I actually worked for one community when I was a little younger in college, and we were instructed to prune crab apples, basically open them up so much that you could throw a football to the next guy at the other tree. Well, we learned quickly the next year when you came back on those trees that we pruned that way, they were thicker the next year than they were the year we pruned them because we took too much, and so you got a lot of water sprouts and those things coming in. So I would focus, Dennis, on those rubbing and crossing branches because if even on a crab apple, those branches can rub, cause wounds that can be entry for decay. Also, with all that competition in there, they can take a little more light. You'll get a little better flower production if you do that. So I would just focus on those. Go right in there and take some of those ones that are really rubbing and just take a few at a time.
Okay.
I worked with an old forester, and he said pruning was 10% knowledge and 90% guts, Dennis. You just got to go in there and you got to go do it.
Go for it, Dennis.
You have truly inspired me.
I'm going
to do this.
But with that said, you want to use that knowledge very carefully because you can over-prune. And with shade trees, the real critical thing, if we're doing clearance with an oak or a maple or something like that, we have the tendency to want to get that 10-foot clearance as quickly as we can. So we'll come in there and we'll prune those quarter-inch, half-inch branches, and we'll get that new tree, and all of a sudden there's only 4 foot of branches left on the top. That's what I call the truffle tree look, or
mushroom
or whatever you want
to
call it. The poodle cut, maybe, the tail poodle cut. We want to avoid that because earlier I said that the leaves and branches are critical to a tree. So with shade trees, we tend to want to leave. The thing you got to think about is on any shade tree, it grows from the tips of the branches. So if you have a branch at 5 feet, come back in 10 years, that branch is still going to be at 5 feet. So if you're going to do clearance in your yard, you look at that tree and say, the first 10 feet, eventually I'm going to have to take those off if I want 10-foot of clearance or 8-foot of clearance or whatever. But what I'm asking you to do is leave those lower branches till they're about an inch and then take them off before they're 2 inches. One thing we want to do is minimize the wound and not prune them before they're too – or when they get too big. But you want to get them off soon enough that that wound can seal shut.
We have an email we can maybe get to before the break, Catherine. This is from Julia in Marion. She says she has a white oak that has 2 leader branches. How do I pick which one to cut and which to keep?
Generally, you try to look for the one that's the best connected with the trunk itself. So, and hopefully the straightest. Sometimes the one that maybe goes up to the side a little bit and is crooked on top might seem the one that you want to take, but if it's better connected to the trunk and the top is starting to go straight, it's okay if it has a little bit of curve to it. So again, you try to pick that one that's the straightest, the best connected to the trunk. If you got one that's really weak angled and it's a low percentage of the trunk that's going to be left, that's the one you probably want to take off.
We're going to come back in just a few moments. And Richard, I promise we'll get you involved in the conversation. Sorry about that. We've got a couple of calls about trees, too, and we'll take those. You can join in the conversation at 866-780-9100. Mark Vitosh, District Forester from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist, are here. It's Horticulture Day on the program. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Catherine Perkins, and Dennis Reese and I are both filling in for Charity Nebbe today. We've been talking trees, but questions about anything in your landscape is fair game today. Join in the conversation at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. Our guests are Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. And Richard, sorry we didn't get you involved in that first segment, but I understand you're interested in talking a little bit about pruning fruit trees. Now, are the rules for pruning fruit trees and shade trees essentially the same, or are they different?
Well, pretty much the same. I would say if you have a bearing tree that's producing apples or other fruit, the main thing is to go out there before bud break and prune on any dead, diseased, or damaged branches. That's your first objective. Once you've done that, if you have some branches that maybe grow too low, they're hanging rather low, go ahead and prune those off. If you have branches that maybe grow upward or inward, prune those out. When you're done with that, if the canopy is still quite dense, go ahead and do some thinning, where you take out some of those branches so you get better fruit development and maximize the yield.
Okay. How do you know when you've done it too much? We were just talking about that before the break.
There's an old saying that you're not done pruning that fruit tree until you can throw your hat through it.
Smaller than a football.
Yeah. I think that's an exaggeration, but it goes to the point that most people are afraid to prune, and they probably don't prune enough. And so you need to prune quite a bit to have a nice, productive fruit tree.
But that's the difference between a fruit tree and a shade tree, where we probably don't want to thin that much on a shade tree versus a fruit tree.
Right.
Okay. Well, we've got some questions about pruning, so why don't we get to those? Larry is going to be first in Fairfield. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have some peach trees, some different varieties, and one year I took the advice to clean out the inside of the tree and took care of the branches that were going vertically, but the tree bore so much fruit that I lost a lot of the main branches on the tree, and I'm just wondering, what's the trick to doing peach trees? It seems like they're a little different because the branches get so long that they bear, and then they just get so heavy that they can break off.
Right. The key there is, if they flower and bear a large crop, to go out there within a few weeks of flowering and remove some of those fruit. And okay. So when you're done, there should be a fruit every 8 inches on that branch. If you have more than that, you need to do some thinning. And in some years, you may have to remove like maybe 3/4 of the fruit. If you don't do that, you have all these fruit. They get very, very heavy. They weigh the branch down. It breaks. So the whole thing is a disaster. So that's true for peaches. That's true for apples. That's true for pears. If they flower heavily, produce a good crop, go ahead and do some thinning. The commercial people, they can actually spray the tree and cause some of those fruit to abort and fall off. But as far as a homeowner, they have to do it by hand.
Well, what I found is that the branches seem to get so long, and I've looked at some of the way the commercial people do, and they seem to truncate the branches so that they're not so long. So they get more growth on the interior of the tree, the fruit's growing closer to the larger part of the branch.
Well, it's possible that maybe if you had an extremely long branch, you could maybe prune that branch back a little bit in the spring so it's not as long. But I think part of the problem is when you have a lot of damage to a fruit tree, or if you prune the fruit tree heavily, you're going to get a lot of growth that growing season. And
That
new growth is going to be excessive. It's going to be weak, and it's going to be prone to breakage the following year. So when you do prune, again, do it properly. Excessively, you're going to have problems. And if you have a lot of damage or breakage, you'll probably have problems the following year.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for the call, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, remind us, Richard, how far along the branch should you see a fruit?
When you're dealing with things like apples and pears and peaches, you should have one fruit every 8 inches on that branch.
Okay.
And oftentimes, like apple trees, they flower in clusters. So you may have like 3 or 4 fruit if we have a good year. And basically, all have to come off except for that one. So.
Boy, you know, that's painful.
It's hard to do.
It's very hard to do.
Do you eeny, meeny, miny, moe to decide which one to take, Richard, or what?
You kind of look at them, and sometimes you may notice that maybe one or two maybe has some damage, maybe insect damage or something else, and obviously that one comes off. So you kind of look at the fruit, decide which one you think is the best, leave that. But that's the main problem is that people, they grow the fruit tree for the fruit, and it seems odd that you go out there and actually remove the fruit. So hard to do.
It is. Okay, Liz is going to be next in Mount Vernon. Hi there, Liz.
Hello. So this is a question about a strategy for watering, keeping trees alive when you have a drought. I planted 8 tree-spade trees in the spring of 2010, so this 2013 will be my 4th growing season. According to my instructions, I will still need to water them if I get less than an inch of rain a week, and I did water them through the drought last year. My town is preparing a water conservation plan to implement in case we have the same kind of drought this summer, and that plan would restrict or eliminate landscape and tree watering. So is there anything that I can be doing as soon as the ground thaws and before we maybe get into the heat drought of the summer when they implement this plan that I could be doing to try to ensure that these large trees are going to have something to get them through a period if I'm not allowed to water them?
I think a lot of people are in Liz's boat, Mark.
Right. Do you want to start with that, Richard, or do you want me to start with that?
You can start with that.
Well, the first thing I would say, if you don't already have the trees mulched, I would make sure that they're mulched. And then probably I would come in the spring and water right away if you can, if you're allowed, and get good soaking on those. And now that these have been in the ground for 3 or 4 years, don't focus the water as much around the trunk, but start getting it out or kind of around the edge of the branches and then a little bit in and a little bit out, and focus the water in those areas. But make sure you have them well mulched. I guess the thing that you could do is, if you have any way to store rainwater or collect rainwater and capture as much as you can, I would look at that as a source of trying to have some water available. Would you have anything else, Richard?
I would think mulching would be the key. Make sure you have a nice thick layer of mulch around the tree, 3 to 4 inches deep. Maintain that depth, and that's going to conserve moisture quite a bit. Bare ground dries out amazingly fast. If you have it covered with like wood chip, shredded bark, it's going to do a lot to conserve that moisture. So that would be a very important key.
Don't put the mulch, though, around the trunk. And pull it a couple inches away. Don't mound it on the trunk. And keep it that 2 to 4 inches like Richard talked. And don't go 6 to 12, or, you know, more is better, because you can actually over mulch and cause some problems with root rots and stuff.
Okay, so I've got the mulch done. So what I think you're telling me is if I've got good mulch and if I've got water them in the spring, that they can actually maybe go longer through the drought than I thought they could.
Right. With the mulch, that's going to help you a lot. I mean, that's going to help conserve, and that's going to help protect whatever you can use within the limits of the restrictions, or if you can get, like I said, rainwater, whatever you can collect on your own. You know, every little bit that you can collect that way is all going to help. So whatever water you can get to them when you can, that's going to be beneficial. But really, I think, like we said, mulch is going to be your best bet to try to extend it through those times where you can't water.
Good luck, Liz.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Should we take an email?
Sure. Go right
ahead. Here's one from Jared in Ames. He said, could Mark and Richard discuss what native species are ideal for windbreaks and that could also provide early or late forage for pollinators? He also says, this is the best radio program by far. Thought I'd share that with you.
Well, I'll start with some of the windbreak trees, and Richard can add the pollinators, some of the pollinator species and stuff. But for windbreaks, we're kind of limited if we're looking at evergreen species. We don't have a lot of native species that are actually evergreen in Iowa. We only have a couple. And the two that kind of stand out for windbreak trees, depending on your soil conditions, are eastern red cedar, that old ditch cedar, and purple this time of year. But it's a good tree. It's good for a lot of wildlife. A lot of different species utilize that cone that looks like an actual berry, but it's actually a conelet or cone. And then eastern white pine. Those are really our two native conifers. Actually, balsam fir is a native conifer, but only up in the very corner of northeast Iowa in very protected, nice sites. So those are really our only two. But we do use a few other species. Norway spruce is not a native, but it's pretty adaptable to our conditions and works fairly well as a windbreak. And some drier soils, as you go further west in western Iowa, white fir, concolor fir is used some too. So there are a few non-natives, and the reason I would recommend those, because those species don't become invasive. They don't spread in Iowa, so they're not really a concern. But white pine and eastern red cedar are two of your better. Our weather is very tough, though, as we've seen, and any evergreen, when it gets dry and stuff, can have a tough time, but those are two that do okay. Neither of those, or conifers in general, don't like wet soil. So it's got to be a moist, well-drained soil. Cedar will go even a little bit to the sandy arena, too. White pine, not as much, but cedar, if you have a sandier soil, would do okay, too. How about those pollinator species there, Richard?
I'm not sure exactly what he means by that.
Are there a couple different shrubs that you could think of that might have late blooms? Or I can't think of anything that's going to have a late bloom, you know, most of the shrub species are going to be spring or early summer.
Right. And as far as a windbreak type plant.
The only thing, if they wanted some pollinator stuff, they could somehow incorporate some native wildflowers in some pockets or strips maybe in those areas if they wanted some pollinator species from there.
Possibly. Because most trees are going to bloom in the spring of the year.
So, right.
So maybe
that's the best we can do on that one.
There you go. Okay. Well, wildflower strip sounds nice to me.
Okay.
let's go to Chad and Decorah next. Hi there, Chad.
Hi there. Hey, I've got a question about planting some grafted trees. I grafted about 50 trees, and the graft union is about 8 inches above the original root ball on the rootstock. And I'm wondering, do I need to plant that whole section of rootstock underneath the ground, like 2 inches from the union, or do I plant it, the rootstock, at the original area of the root ball?
What kind of trees are they?
They're apple trees.
Okay. I would plant them basically at the same depth they're growing right now.
Okay.
Not any deeper. So that root graft is going to be several inches high, but if you plant several inches deeper, then you may have some problem as far as being planted too deeply. So I would just plant it as is, basically.
Okay. All right. Would you recommend the next time I do it to put the union a little lower then? Or
I probably would, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that was my question. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for calling, Chad.
Bye-bye.
And let's see, we'll go to Michelle in Cedar Rapids, too, before we hit the break. Hi there, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, a simple question. When they say a 2-inch limb, is that diameter or circumference?
Diameter.
Thank you.
So that's a great question, but we're talking diameter. And generally now, that doesn't mean that you can't go out and prune a 4-inch, a 5-inch branch if you have to for clearance or if you have a situation. What we're really talking about is when you're developing younger trees, mostly in that first 5 to 15 years, you want to minimize the size of wound that you make because trees don't heal. They actually seal. They put new callus tissue over those wounds that we create, and they actually make compartments inside the tree. So if we can, the smaller the wound that we make, the easier is for that tree to respond to that wound. So again, usually I kind of target somewhere between 1 inch and 2 inches is when I try to get those off. And that's if you really have control over the process that you can go through. But again, if you have to prune a 3 or 4 inch branch at some time because, again, it's in the way or it's poor structure or whatever, you can do that. You just, when you're developing trees, you want to try to minimize that wound.
I want to jump in here for just a second because you've mentioned wounds a couple of times
and
how trees cope with those.
Right.
So should we do something to help the tree along with those?
That's a great question. The thing that you should do is prune it correctly. That's the key. There's a thing called branch bark ridge and a branch collar, and you want to identify those. There's a great publication written by Dr. Jeff Iles at Iowa State University. I believe it's titled Pruning Trees and Shrubs. It's an SUL publication. It actually shows you pictures where the branch collar and the branch bark ridge are. And if you prune outside, just outside the branch collar, that's where that callus tissue will respond to that wound. The thing we want to avoid is wound dressings. We really don't recommend those anymore. A lot of the old wound dressings were tar-based, creosote. Those could actually cause damage to the tissue trying to close those wounds. So in general, if you prune it at the right time and you prune it correctly, you don't need those wound dressings. The only exception that we tend to make is if we have an oak tree that we accidentally wound or we have to prune an oak tree because we broke a branch or something in the middle of the summer, or we have a windstorm and a branch breaks and you're going to clean it up, I would use just some latex paint. And you can pick the color, whatever works for you, but put just a light coat of latex paint on that wound to try to deter the beetle from being attracted. But that would be the only situation where really we need wound dressings.
Okay.
All right, well, let's try to get an email in here before the break. This is from Marlene. We have a white pine that is about 15 feet tall. It was planted too close to a large, is it Amer maple.
Amer maple, yep.
Amer, I guessed correctly. That shaded it from the east. Consequently, all the branches turned to the west, and it's bare on the east. The amer maple was damaged by the snow this winter and will probably have to be removed. Is there any way to encourage the branches on the white pine to come back around so it looks more balanced?
No.
Okay, well.
That was a short one.
And it doesn't have to be a perfect tree.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Right. So. And that's going to be – conifers are one that don't tend to sprout back. So if those branches die, they won't tend to re-leaf or re-branch in those areas. So, you know, if she has a lot of branches that are dead or not looking, so she may just clean those up on the white pine, prune them correctly, and kind of clean any of that out of there. But – as Richard said, she's just going to have to get used to...
It has character.
Yes, yes. And I wouldn't necessarily take branches on the other side to balance it out because, again, the more leaf material you can leave on the tree, the better it is for the tree.
Okay. We'll come back. We'll take more of your calls and questions at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Catherine Perkins, and Dennis Reese and I are filling in for Charity Nebbe today. We've been talking trees, but questions about pretty much anything you want to grow is fair game. You can join in the conversation at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post a question on Facebook. And I wanted to mention that you were talking about a publication right. Just a few moments ago. We do have a link to that posted on our Facebook page
Good. Today.
So if you have questions about pruning and you don't get your questions answered today, you can always...
There's good pictures
check
in that
out. Yes,
too,
there so. Are. I was just noticing that. So let's go back to the phones because we've got a lot of people who are interested in talking to you today. And let's go to Andrew, who's somewhere on I-80. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Very good. I got a question. I've been told this tree, I've been told it's a linden as well as it's been called a basswood.
Yes. Actually, our native linden is American basswood. But it's also called linden, and then there's actually some European varieties like little leaf linden that are called lindens. But basswood and American linden are the same tree.
Okay. So what I've got is I've got two branches that are 5-6 inches in diameter that I'd like to take off at the trunk. Am I going to do any damage to doing that?
As long as you prune them back to the branch collar, if you need to take them off, and as long as there's still a good probably 60 to 65% or 70% of the tree left, you should be okay.
Okay, yeah, it's probably a 50 or 60-foot tall tree, so there's
right.
definitely more
so
than
on
that.
A larger tree, just make sure it gets cut back to that branch collar, and if you're going to do it yourself, make sure you use a couple cuts. You actually go out a ways on the branch, make a bottom cut, and then go outside that cut and make a top cut to drop the weight of the branch off and then come back and cut that stub off so you don't rip the bark down the trunk.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Andrew. Let's go to Joan next in Charles City, who has a little different question. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. I have some boxwood on the front side of my house to the north, and two of them are quite a bit larger than the other three. We had to do some transplanting, and I'd like to kind of get them evened up.
Okay.
And I didn't know how much I could take off the big boxwoods to even these shrubs up.
Well, what you can do is prune them off. I'd probably wait till maybe around mid-April. And you can do some pruning then. And you can prune those bigger ones periodically, maybe 2 or 3 times during the growing season. You keep them down as far as size-wise. So hopefully, by the end of summer, you have plants that are basically equal in size.
Uh-huh. So I shouldn't prune them drastically, but just...
Kind of gradually, right?
Right.
Where you just kind of shear them a little bit periodically to kind of contain them at their current size and let the other ones kind of catch up.
Yeah, because the two are about 3 foot tall and the other ones are about probably 18 inches. So
okay, so It's going to take some time, but hopefully by the end of summer, they're going to be more equal in size.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Joan. Jim is going to be next in Iowa City. Hi there, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a volunteer oak tree that came up about a foot away from a pussy willow tree, and they're both about 15 feet tall, but the oak tree's only, 4-inch diameter. And I'm kind of wondering, when do I need to take that pussy willow tree out? It's about 10 or 12 inches at its base.
I would say if it's starting to alter the structure of the oak tree where it's not, the oak tree isn't getting enough sunlight and really expanding its branches out, and it's really starting to alter that, or if it looks like it's going to cause it to shift a different direction, then I would think about taking it out of there.
Okay, so right now it's just growing straight up, and it's the pussy willow tree is leaning away from it.
Right.
Do I need to worry about the root structure developing on the oak tree?
I mean, there's going to be some competition there, but, in the woods, when trees are close, they can often be a couple feet apart. I mean, that happens. It's going to make it a little more difficult. I mean, the bottom line is the sooner you get that willow tree out, the more free growing it's going to be for that oak tree.
And is that something where I'll have to just cut it down and it'll keep sending shoots up and then cut it again?
Well, in this case, it might be a good idea to maybe cut it down and then take some Roundup and apply the Roundup directly to the cut surface of that stump. Because if you just cut it down, it will resprout and keep on doing that. But if you put on the Roundup, that should kill the root system and it shouldn't harm the oak tree.
Okay.
And if you don't want to use Roundup, then you would just have to keep cutting. Or if some people just don't want to use it. So if you're going to do that, I would actually make the cuts when you cut those sprouts later in the summer to make it harder for the tree to keep putting on new shoots.
Okay. And I could take the tree down in the summer, too. That wouldn't be a problem.
Well, again, as long as you're not going to break any branches on the oak, if it's leaning to the point where you can drop it away from the tree without causing any broken branches, but if the branches are tangled at all and it might snap some branches, I would actually take it in the winter.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Ready
for
something,
Jim?
Completely different?
Yes.
Something completely different. Here's a question from Ellen. Is it okay to save your dishwater and rinse water to water outdoor plants? If so, is there a specific kind of detergent I should use in my water?
I think I would use the rinse water, probably not the wash water, because you have a lot of soap in there. You have maybe grease and other things in there. I would be inclined not to use the wash water, but the rinse water.
Okay, we're going to have some water conservation questions. I can see this coming
already
as the season moves along and sales on rain barrels, I predict, may go through the roof. Liz is going to be next in Des Moines. Hi there, Liz.
Hi. I had a question about a lot of the oak trees I've been seeing around town that have, they didn't drop their leaves this winter, and all the leaves are brown. Are they dead? Are the trees dead? Is this oak wilt?
Probably not. A lot of it depends on species, because there are some oak species, especially the pin oaks, that tend to, even when they're bigger, have what we call a juvenile characteristic where they actually hold those leaves. The incision layer just doesn't get defined and they just hang on. And especially younger ones will do that too. Of a lot of species, they'll hold. But in general, it shouldn't mean that there's a problem. Now, with that said, there may be a few out there that did have some problems last year, and there is a problem. But I would say in general, some of those leaves staying on is actually a common characteristic on some oaks.
Okay. And we have a 100-plus-year oak tree in our front yard that's getting some leaves that have brownish spots, a lot of the leaves. And I've heard about oak wilt. Is that something... what are the characteristics of that?
Well, the characteristics of oak wilt are actually, depending on the species, but like with red oak and black oak and pin oak, the leaves will usually start turning kind of a bronzish brown and sometimes kind of wilty looking, and then they'll just start popping off. But that'll be sometime around July. And certain years it might be late June, and it usually is over before mid to late August. But those leaves will completely fall off. Now, there's a lot of different fungi and different leaf spots out there that you may see on trees. We also have a tree or a disease on bur oaks called bur oak blight, which is a newer disease that kind of has been showing up a lot in the last 5 years. It'll look similar to oak wilt. Those leaves will brown up on the edges. Some of them will fall off, but come the next spring, those leaves will come back. On oak wilt, if it loses its leaves and it actually has oak wilt, those branches are dead, or that tree is dead, and it will not come back. The thing I would tell you is if you start seeing some brown patches or some leaves on your tree in the summer, take a few samples, go to your county extension office, take them in there, and they'll do a great job. If they don't know what it is, they can send you a sample up to the ISU Diagnostic Clinic, and they can see what it is. Thing is, there's a lot of different leaf spots out there. Once they're there, there's nothing you can do. And in general, they're often not that harmful.
Okay. Liz, I hope that answers your question. Tom's going to be next in Coon Rapids. Hi there, Tom.
Hello. I have several species of pine trees, including a white pine and blue spruce. And what I noticed is there's a lot of empty branches on the interior of these trees. Should I be trimming those off or down?
From an aesthetic side, if you have the one thing, if you have spruce trees that are showing a lot of the lower branches starting to decline, especially from kind of the inside moving out towards the tips, there's actually some fungi that can actually cause that. So you may want to get some samples and see if that's what you have. But if you have some branches that have very little left on them and aesthetically you don't like them, you can take some of those off, but from a health aspect, as long as they still have foliage, they're still somewhat beneficial. So it may be more of a static thing, and the more foliage you can leave on, the better.
Yeah, these are empty branches. They're smaller than the ones that are showing.
Oh, okay. So they're completely empty. Yeah. I mean, if they're completely dead branches with nothing on them, you can prune those out.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Let's talk with Earl next in West Des Moines. Hi there, Earl.
Good morning. I've got about a 10-year-old scarlet maple, and it's got a pretty pronounced V branch that's just on the main trunk. So I know someday that thing's going to split in two. My question is, in about 10 or 15 years, could I put a large bolt to those two branches to give it some added strength? Would that help?
Well, there's a couple of philosophies to this. If those branches are only an inch or two, I would take one of them off, even though it may take even more than 20 to 30% of the tree. Excuse me. So it's one of those, if that tree was in my backyard, I would probably take the risk to improve the structure, even though I know I'm going to probably take a significant part of that tree. But to answer your question, as that tree gets bigger, and if those branches are, say, 4 or 5 inches, and it's going to take a lot of the tree, you can run a bolt through that joint. And then what we often do is go 2/3 of the height from that crotch, and then we run a cable across, usually with lag hooks or screws. And we don't wrap around, but we actually cable that higher up to give that joint more strength that way, too.
Okay, a couple of good choices. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
But I want something a little yeah. Again, a little different here.
Okay.
A little different, at least. Scott in Davenport, is there a bamboo tree, I assume he means, a bamboo tree that will prosper in an Iowa environment? I would love to use it along tall fencing.
There are a few species of bamboo that might grow in Iowa. There is one called Mexican bamboo or Japanese bamboo that actually I consider to be an invasive plant.
I was just going to put
my non-native hat on, but I was going to let you finish first.
You could,
thank you, Richard.
This could be disastrous, couldn't it?
I would not plant Mexican bamboo or Japanese
you.
Bamboo. I would not. It grows about 8 foot tall. It's not a true bamboo, but it resembles bamboo in appearance. It's very vigorous. It spreads by underground suckers or rhizomes. And once you have it, it's very, very hard to destroy.
You could have a yard full of bamboo, right?
Well, it does spread, and if you try killing it, it may take maybe 2 or 3 years. It's very, very tough, very aggressive. So I would not plant that species. That tends to be kind of a characteristic of bamboos in that they tend to spread and sometimes aggressively and become weedy. Some of these smaller true bamboos, if they're hardy in Iowa, I don't think they're that big of a problem normally.
Okay.
But we only have a handful that we can grow, true bamboos.
Let's try to squeeze in another call or two here. We've got Kyle in Cedar Falls next. Hi, Kyle.
Hey. My question is, I've been wanting to plant blueberries this year, and I've been doing some research on additives to make the soil the right pH and stuff like that. And sulfur was recommended. They said it'd take a while. But I saw online that you can buy sulfur for diesel engines a lot cheaper, like half as cheap as buying it for actual horticulture uses.
Well, I'm not sure about that type of sulfur. How many plants do you intend to plant?
About 4 or 5.
Okay. What I would suggest, instead of using sulfur of any type, is go ahead and buy some sphagnum peat moss, commonly sold in these kind of bale-like bags at garden centers. And sphagnum peat moss is very, very acidic. And so when you plant your blueberries, dig a really wide hole, maybe 3-4 feet wide, even though you have a small plant, fairly shallow, and then take half of that soil from the hole and then mix that with an equal part of the sphagnum peat moss. And then backfill with that 50-50 mix. And that will very nicely lower the pH. Do a very good job, and you're basically also adding organic matter to the soil.
How deep should that go? Like a foot or two?
Your hole should not be very deep at all, because blueberries have a very shallow fibrous root system. So my guess is a hole may only have to be like a foot deep, but quite wide. And then when you're done, go ahead and mulch with wood chips. And every spring I would go out either with sulfur or ammonium sulfate, and I would sprinkle that around these blueberry plants. And the sulfur in those materials will keep the pH at the proper level. And so that's what I would do rather than just using sulfur, because sulfur does take some time to lower the pH.
Kyle, thanks very much for your call. Quick question, is it too late to prune maple trees in Cedar Falls?
No.
Okay. And when do you feed fruit trees and berries, Richard?
Fruit trees, typically we don't have to fertilize them because our Iowa soils are quite fertile. If we do fertilize, we can actually overdo it. As far as something like strawberries and raspberries, we would fertilize strawberries, if they're June-bearing strawberries, after they're done bearing in late June, early July, if we have raspberries early in the spring.
Okay. Mark, Richard, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
It's
You're
been
welcome.
A lot of fun. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden and Dennis Reese. Production assistance today from Jason Burns. Our theme music is composed by and performed by the River Monks. I'm Catherine Perkins, and for Dennis Reese, Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.